You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Dr. Melody Fox right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host today, Dr. Melody Fox. My co-host, Alan Cardoza, is off on assignment today and will be back with us next week, I certainly hope. But he's doing his extraordinary work as we're here today to bring you guests that can inspire, educate, and entertain while bringing options to raising the quality of life for the whole family. Now, we address issues such as locating your runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and supporting the parents, especially those of teens, and so much more. With each of us having over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, we have been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in this field who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. We will bring you some of these incredibly talented and caring people each week as we bring to you Answers for the Family. Now, today's topic is all about stress. Now, what adult or child doesn't have some type of stress or a perception of stress? Well, actually, it's all about managing stress, whether in relationships, in the workplace, in your checkbook, or the remainder of your busy life. Stress abounds like never before in the history of time. Now, based on cutting-edge research and psychological tips, today's guest is going to be talking about saying goodbye to stress. It is actually our guest, Dr. Jeff Brown. He is a psychologist and assistant clinical professor at the Department of Psychiatry at Harvard Medical School. He is the author of several books, including the newest title, which we are discussing today, Say Goodbye to Stress, Manage Your Problems Big and Small Every Day. Now, Dr. Jeff Brown walks alongside clients who want to manage inconvenient psychological problems and symptoms, and also teaches individuals how to apply research-based strategies to fine-tune their brains and optimize life in a meaningful and rich way. And he discusses that in another popular international seller called The Winner's Brain. Now, Dr. Brown was the first ever psychologist on the Boston Marathon medical team and remains at the same post over a decade later. So I take it he's in very good shape. And he knows what he's talking about because he is a board certified both in clinical and cognitive behavioral psychology by the American Board of Professional Psychology, and is also on the U.S. Olympic Registry of Psychologists. Now, Dr. Jeff Brown, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you so much. I've been looking forward to our chat.
Well, I've been so excited about talking with you as well. I absolutely love your book. Now, it's based on, it's taken from the Chicken Soup for the Soul series. And I noticed that Harvard Medical School does a lot of books with Chicken Soup for the Soul. How does that come about?
You know, it's very, very interesting, actually. I was contacted by the chief editor of books at Harvard Health Publications about this connection that Chicken Soup for the Soul and Harvard Medical School were teaming up for a health series. And first of all, I thought, wow, I had never thought about that. And the more I got into hearing about the idea, the more it seemed so appealing. Harvard Medical School, you know, is all about improving your life, particularly Harvard Health Publications, mm-hmm. wanting you to have a great life that's research-based and doing the best you can to manage life and be healthy. And Chicken Soup, it's all about empowerment and storytelling. And we just know that that's a great fit, particularly in psychology and therapy. So bringing these two household names together made terrific sense, and I thoroughly enjoyed going through the stories and helping select those stories that were in the book so they're meaningful to readers, as well as the pieces that I wrote and contributed in a substantial way around tips for dealing with modern stress. So it's just been a fun project all the way around. Chicken Soup people are great. Harvard Health people are great. And there are other great titles out there that have come to be as well.
Sure. And I have enjoyed a lot of the Chicken Soup for the Soul series. And what I really like are all the individual vignettes and the little stories that people share that back whatever the topic is that you're talking about. But what I really enjoy is all the tips that you give in managing your everyday problems and the stressors that come into your life. And I've used this book with my interns that I supervise at the clinic for our Take Care of Yourself Day.
Because we're always
trying to, if we don't take care of ourselves, we can't take care of our clients and our patients. And also, I refer this book and suggest this book to a lot of my clients, too. And I like that you are a cognitive behavioral therapist, because I'm primarily that as well. And those techniques are so empirically validated, and they work.
You're so right about that, and it's good to know that we have strategies and interventions that we can use on our own. We don't have to have someone there necessarily prompting us to use them once we learn them, and that's what Say Goodbye to Stress is about, is sharing these tips, the cutting edge, what's the latest way of dealing with some of these things. So we hope that readers are really enjoying success with those interventions and strategies that are very, very accessible.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're talking about stress, too. We've heard about stress. Everybody's under stress, everybody. And now they're saying more than ever. I like to not focus on that, of course. But, you know, they say stress is greater than ever before in the history of time. Do you agree with that or not agree with that? Or what's your take on it?
You know, I agree that stress, we can't get away from stress, right? The first thing is that unless we don't have a pulse, we're going to have to deal with stress. And that sounds like a pretty good trade-off to me. But the idea here is that I think stress has changed shape and form. If you think about now, we have so many stress-related opportunities and experiences that face us. Think back to the 1930s during the Great Depression. Stress was about survival and eating. And certainly, we have to pay attention to our paychecks these days and making sure that we're covering all those financial bases. And it is tough right now, but not as tough as it was for the country back in the 30s. Mm-hmm. But the point here is that now we have technology. We have all of these different opportunities that come at us, and we're fearful that we're going to miss out on these things. We're told that if you're going to prep your kid for college, they've got to be involved in, a dozen different activities. No one can do a dozen activities well. Mm-hmm. So these opportunities, we take them on. It causes stress. And so our stress is really opportunity-related and technology-related. We're trying to do too much with the time that we have.
Yeah, especially with the technology. I mean, I see people walking around and they're texting all the time, and they're on their phone or their iPod, and they're not paying attention to what's going on around them. They're not very mindful of their environment, and it seems like they do a lot of avoidance of what's going on just to not interact with other people that are right in front of them, and it just seems to add a lot more stressors and distractions.
Again, totally agree that is very, very isolating. And we see it not only in public, but I know that you know this too, we're seeing the isolation happening in homes, mm-hmm. where people divide up and everyone goes to their own bedroom or living room with their laptop or phone, and that's what they're on and that's what they do socially. So this is not only tearing away at us socially as individuals, I think it's tearing away at families. Mm-hmm. And it's not a good thing. It's not a good thing at all.
Yeah, it's like nobody has the family phone in the living room where everybody could hear your conversation.
Exactly.
You'd go hide in your bedroom for those late night calls to your girlfriend or boyfriend.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, so mom and dad don't have to hear. So, but I'm just thinking about, that isolation adds more stress. I mean, we're social beings. We're supposed to connect with other people. And I think it's more than just being on the iPod or the cell phone or on Skype. It's actually connecting with people one-on-one that helps decrease some of our anxiety.
You're exactly right. I think that we do need to connect with people. We know this from research, tons of it, that lets us know that social connections are helpful when managing stress. When we have tragedy come along, we need a social network to undergird us, to really support us. And if we have neglected that and we've let our kids neglect that, mm-hmm. Then we're going to be up against even more of a challenge because we don't have anybody to kind of rely on during those times. We've had lots of songs throughout popular culture that talk about connection and lean on me and those things. There's some truth to all of that. Mm-hmm. There's a very important reason why we have those connections and why we have to stop and really take inventory about our friendships, that our friendships shouldn't just be virtual. They need to be face-to-face as much as possible, and that will require getting rid of some screen time that's really invading that time that's so precious.
Well, good luck pulling away anything from a child's hand.
That's true. It's so true because it's so reinforcing, isn't it? You talk about the images that we see in movies and so forth. The statistics on that are pretty revealing, aren't they? Where the images had come at such a greater and faster pace than what they did even 10 or 15 years ago. Just when you go to the movie, you're going to see that many more images just because that's what our culture is teaching us through media and through things that need to keep our attention. And that's a little bit scary, too. I'm a little bit concerned, in fact, quite a bit concerned about what is going to be coming down, 10, 15 years from now because of that.
Yeah, and I keep thinking about all that instant gratification, that instant stimulus definitely adds to the stress levels because you have no time for downtime. You have no time to take a breath and go, whew, let's take a break here.
Right, right. And I think as parents, we have to be very, very mindful of what we're modeling for our kids in this area, because we're just as guilty, aren't we, of trying to do all of the things that technology says we're supposed to do. Technology, I thought early on that it's supposed to save us time. But if you think about even the first microwave oven that came out, I remember that as a kid, what a big deal that was. But people didn't just sit around while the microwave was running. They were doing something else because they had time saved. So now they're starting to pack it in. Same thing's happening now. We're just at a much higher higher level of technology, where we have the cell phones going off, we have the text messages coming in, we're checking email, 3, 4, 5 email accounts that we think we have to have. All of those things are coming in. It's called multitasking. Uh-huh. We've heard about it. We've been duped into believing it, that we're supposed to be good at it, but our brains say no way. Our brains are not wired to allow us to be efficient multitaskers. I think they're multitaskers, but no one's really good at it. You don't see it as an Olympic sport yet, and you won't.
There must be good reasons for it.
That's right. Particularly synchronized multitasking, right? That'll never, ever happen.
Well, they have that synchronized diving now, which is, I'm still going, huh?
Yeah, that's pretty cool, isn't it?
Anyway, well, the Olympics have just finished up, so that's a good thing. And I do want to talk about the winner's brain in just a little bit, too. But going back to the stress, it's like, how is the American family affected by stress today? And, you know, and what do you think can be done about it? I know we touched a little bit about it.
Yeah, it's nice to see research that's coming out that is starting to be, we've always had research about families, as you know, but it's nice to see that there's an emphasis on getting your kids and you at the dinner table in the evening, and there's emphasis on how to talk with your kid and how to engage your kid in a way that's meaningful to that child in the culture they're living in. It's really nice to see that, and I think it's necessary to be able to give that emphasis and give that depth to the relationship you have with your kid. Families, we are under attack, whether we like it or not. So many things are coming at us that require our time, require our finances. It just eats away. It's being eroded. Again, I'm very concerned about that. What do we do about it? I think we've got to stop and put the brakes on and learn to say no on a lot of things. In Say Goodbye to Stress, we dedicated a section to how to say no to people. It's something that has to happen in our culture, and it has to help. It will help us in managing stress, and also our kids will be watching how we do that as well.
Mm-hmm. And the whole thing is that word no. I know you mentioned that tiny little word that we don't use enough in your book. Can you expand on that even more? Because I know not even in the family, but in the workplace, people don't say no enough, and they take
right.
it so much.
You're right. Now I should say no. I'd prefer not to elaborate on that,
okay.
right? Just to demonstrate that.
And that's okay. I'll respect that.
I would love to tell you about how to say no, because I think it's something that that we all have to practice. I have to practice that. First of all, people come to us usually with some sort of compliment and a request, all sort of bundled together, and man, don't we eat those things up. We're asked to do something, and we're often asked to do it because we have a special quality about us or a special qualification, or we meet the criteria for something, and so they appeal to us in such a way that, oh gosh, it feels good to be needed that way.
Mm-hmm.
But I tell you what happens is we usually evaluate those situations. We find out in our thinking, we appraise it and think, well, it's probably about an hour, maybe an hour and a half is all I'm going to have to do each week on that project. But then what we do is we commit ourselves to maybe 8 or 10 of those things, and now we've got a part-time job just dealing with the really cool opportunities. Remember, I mentioned earlier the stress comes from opportunities that are given to us, whether that's chairing some sort of board, or we're running the bake sale at school, or we're the next, you know, assistant to the assistant soccer coach. All these things do require things, and they're always going to require more than what we thought initially.
Mm-hmm.
So saying no to people, we have to be prepared for them to ask us the second time. Always be prepared for that. Just when you say no, it doesn't mean they're going to come in then with the guilt question. They're going to say things like, oh, well, you're not as busy as other parents, or you don't have as many kids as somebody else does.
Mm-hmm.
All of these things to kind of dig at you to get at that guilt. We're not interested in that guilt. We're interested in still maintaining that no. I think it's very important to, if they don't give up, then just suggest to them, as we talked about in Say Goodbye to Stress, just suggest to them that you need a little bit of time to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you and I both know the decision's already been made, but giving some time gets them to back off a little bit,
mm-hmm.
and then you can follow up with an email, and I believe even better, a handwritten note that says, thanks again so much for the opportunity. Here's the twist, though, that I think is important for us to manage our own guilt and to kind of leave a good taste in that person's mouth, is to list one or two alternatives. Give them suggestions on how they can still solve the problem. Maybe there's someone else that would be good for the job, or a solution or a path they've not considered that they should, and include that in the no thank you note. I think that's so important.
Yeah, and speaking about no, I know there's a lot of guilt associated with parents saying no. And, you know, saying yes to your kids and having to do all these things or run around just so the child could be participating in everything adds a lot more stress to the parent, too. And I'm just curious on your take on it, because I personally think teaching children to manage the stress that they have of being told no and being able to tell their friend or their coach, no, I'm sorry, I can't do it, helps them grow as a person as well.
I think it does help them grow, and I think it's a life experience. You mentioned the winner's brain. One of the things that we learned when writing the winner's brain was that the idea of building a proactive brain, that we have experiences that are unique and novel and new, and we store those memories, actually. It goes into our memory, the memory categories of our brain, so when situations come up again, we have that to draw on to navigate those situations. So coaching your child how to say no is important, giving them the opportunity to say no. We may choose other words like no thank you, or I prefer to do something else, or other ways that don't seem maybe as curt as no does directly, particularly coming from a child who we don't want them to be misperceived as being rude or abrupt, but certainly helping your child navigate that, and sometimes standing close by your child if they're on the phone, or being with them in public, or as they speak to someone in authority, you can kind of be standing there, and that's a great way of giving that child support, but also at the same time giving them the training and experience to be able to advocate for themselves and see that that's a healthy thing.
When you talk about being curt and saying no, I think of a two-year-old. They are really good at saying no.
Aren't they? If you practiced anything for a year, you'd be good at it too.
Absolutely. So, you know, saying goodbye to stress, it is such a wonderful book. And I was wondering, what was it like writing this book and collaborating with so many different people?
Well, again, it was a fun project. I love it because it gave me the opportunity, as they have at Harvard Health have done with me before, given me the opportunity to take things that I do in my office with people and boil that down into a book that is accessible to lots of people. I love it, getting information about mental health out to people and giving them correct, accurate information. We have too many things, you know, I'm going to say fly-by-night sorts of ideas that exist in on the internet. You can find suggestions almost on anything, but one thing that I like about this project is that we have a review process. So even as I write things as an expert, I have other experts who go in and read to make sure that they agree that I'm an expert on those things. And that really gives me a sense of confidence around the fact that I'm giving things to readers in a way that is useful, but it's also accurate and really reflects good current research.
Now, you talk about useful. I know inside the book you have the stress inventory that's kind of used worldwide to evaluate the levels of stress. And I thought it was interesting because during the self-care supervision group I did, I had everybody do it, not share their scores with anybody. It's all personal, but just to evaluate. And I thought, you know, I'm not under a lot of stress. I do a lot of things and I keep busy, but I'm looking at my score going, oh my gosh, how did I score
that amazing?
So high?
I had no idea. It is amazing. You're talking about the Holmes and Ray scale that's been around for generations. But I tell you what, it still is so informative and really gives us insight into what we're actually dealing with. I think we in psychology, we call it habituate. We get used to. We get used to the level of stress, and we don't even really have an idea of all the things that we're under. And I think when you do take that inventory in Say Goodbye to Stress, it's a really informative and insightful way of understanding what it is that you're really up against. And it's kind of a nudge or a reminder that, hey, you are dealing with stuff. You know, our bodies really aren't good at understanding the difference between good stress and bad stress. Bad stress is distress, the things that we talk about to people and complain and gripe and hash over with everybody, and we want to be heard. And then eustress, the positive stress, those things that happen with things that are positive in our lives, like marriage or getting a promotion or buying a new house or even birthdays, if you still count them. You know, that's one way you can eliminate that stress. Just don't count the birthdays, right? But the idea is that our bodies don't know the difference, and it certainly does add up, and it's surprisingly painful for some folks.
Well, I mean, it makes sense to me. And, you know, you have both positive and negative stressors on this stress inventory. And I thought it was just interesting because I almost think ignorance is bliss, because all of a sudden it had to make me stop and go, okay, what do I have to change here?
Yeah, exactly. And it goes back to that statistic that's pretty scary, actually, the 50 to 60% of all of our health-related issues can be traced back to stress. But ignorance is bliss. Ignorance can also be really unhealthy in the long run if you're not tuned into what's happening with stress in your life.
Yeah, because it's well documented that stress compromises the immune system. So that affects a lot of different areas inside your body.
That's right.
And, but there's also that good stress, too, the stress that gets you focused and gets your adrenaline going and gets some excitement in your life. So there is a balance. Everything's about balance, I think.
I think you're right, too. And the idea that there are things that we can be doing with our diet, things that we can be doing with the exercise, things related to sleep, all of those really do factor in. We know it's not only just helpful for stress management, there are certain things that your brain loves as well. Kind of combine Say Goodbye to Stress and the winner's brain here for just a minute. Exercise across the lifespan is incredibly well documented at this point, that's if you're going to do one thing for your brain and one thing for stress management, figure out how to carve out time to exercise and make sure that happens. You don't have to be an extreme marathoner or an ultra marathoner to get training in your life. You can do something where you're doing it, you know, three times a week, 30 minutes. We've heard that forever, but we don't do it. Mm-hmm. As a culture, we don't do it. We need to carve that time out and then figure out two or three other ways that you can get other exercise. We did some shopping with my family over the weekend, and we would park in the back corner of the parking lot and walk to the front door of the store that we needed to go to. So those sort of things where you're just getting more exercise in your life, get creative. It's going to help with stress management, and your brain likes that exercise too, because it gets oxygen in there, helps with building new memories, helps with consolidating memory, lots of things that are related to just good brain health, getting that oxygen in there. And again, it's across the lifespan. And if you haven't been active and you're in your 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, it's still fine. Now is a good time to start. It's never too late when it comes to exercise and a healthy brain.
And that's all. And you just do what you can do. But I do recommend seeing a medical doctor to make sure you're in shape and you don't overdo it if you haven't exercised for a long time.
Absolutely. I always encourage people to see somebody medically, but also keep in mind that what you do today will pay off or not pay off in about 3 weeks. So you have to stick with it and do something just gradually and get those things to change. I love it when people in my office make changes like that. They love it in the long run, and the long run is what counts.
Yeah, and in your book, there is a chapter that was written by somebody else. Somebody else contributed towards it, but it says, all you can do. And I think it was in the talking about monetary meltdown. In this day and age, there's a lot of monetary stress. People are losing their jobs, they're behind in payments, they're wondering how are they going to pay for school supplies, let alone keeping a roof over the head and food on the table. And, you know, what is your advice for parents that might be experiencing this?
Yeah, it is tough. It is tough because as parents, one thing that we usually have in common, and I would say 99% of us have in common, is that we want the best for our kids, that we prioritize that. And we want that to be the case. I think we have to think in the long run about those expenses. Oftentimes, I find that people who come up against expenses like that, sometimes it's a result of poor planning. That we didn't do it intentionally, by the way. Other expenses came up, or we splurged in other areas, and it seemed like those things were priorities at that time. But now other things are priorities. And I realize that the dollar, man, we've got to stretch it a long way these days. But I can tell you this, that when we're prioritizing our spending across the year, we need to know those numbers and we need to know them well and make sure that we're able to delay that gratification on other things that just really aren't a priority. I think it's important to invest in your kids, invest in things that contribute to their education. Those are things that are going directly into that kid. Forget about things that are going to be used up or consumed or spoiled in a matter of, you know, a few weeks or something's outdated in a year. Really think about those purchases and see if it's really something that you need to spend that money on.
Yeah, and what I like in the book, too, is you talk about tips for all types of, you know, financial spenders.
Yes.
You have ways to help people that have all different personalities, I think you called it.
Yes, yes. You know, there are different types of personalities, those that squirrel away their money, you know, different things that we can do to kind of with what we do and how people perceive us. I think the other thing we need to consider, too, financially, is our financial personality has a lot to do with boundaries, believe it or not. Sometimes we impose boundaries on our family because maybe we're really, really, really tight-fisted with our money, or perhaps we just spend like there was no tomorrow. That's also a boundary issue. And that's where it becomes very, very emotional for folks. And being aware of those financial boundaries, particularly think about young adults who are trying to branch away and branch off from mom and dad and kind of cut those apron strings, those are things that we've got to be mindful of first and foremost. Finances are actually the last thing usually that has to happen to become financially independent is take over your own money and not rely on mom and dad. It's a tough one because mom and dad don't like to see you struggling. If they can help provide in any way, they usually will, but sometimes it keeps you from being healthy and independent that way.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I want to talk a little bit about emotions and thoughts because I don't know about your practice, but I know my practice, a lot of people come in and they're so worried and they're so stressed and they ruminate on all these thoughts and all their emotions. They're either really into their head with thoughts or really into the emotions with all these feelings. And what is your key to managing that kind of stress? Or the things that are perpetuating that.
Sure. As you mentioned earlier, the cognitive behavioral piece of this is so important. I believe that, in the cognitive behavioral piece, the cognitive is the thinking, for listeners who maybe aren't familiar with the term, and behavioral is the action. But the cognitive, how we think about things, we hear in the research and have known from lots of great founders of CBT that thinking can be irrational. Or it can be distorted. I love to use the term accurate or inaccurate. Is what I'm believing true? Is it accurate? Is it really reflecting what is true of myself and others and the world around me? I think we have to really take a quick inventory of that. If we're having some sort of negative emotion or we demonstrate some sort of negative behavior, we have to stop and look at what that underlying belief or thought process is that leads to that. It's a great red flag to look for. If you have a negative emotion, you're just angry all the time, or if you're worried all the time, those are red flags that there is very likely something going on in the thinking process that is off base and is not really accurate. Mind reading is one. Fortune telling is another one.
Right.
Fortune telling, when we look down the road and we get outside of the here and now, the moment we're actually in, and we try to predict the future, which we stink at, by the way, we try to predict the future, And we're no good at that. And most people that I know that I catch predicting the future are always predicting something negative. It's a bad outcome, and that's why they worry. I believe that it's important to stay in the here and now, mm-hmm. and back off on that so we're not doing the fortune telling and not looking too far down the road. It's important to plan. Listeners are probably saying, well, you just said think about your money the whole year long. It's like, okay, yeah, we'll play by the rules here. But some things that we ruminate on, like you said, ruminating meaning we just think about it over and over and over again, that's not healthy either. So we do have to take that quick look at how we think and make sure that it's accurate. And that's a great example of some of the tips in Say Goodbye to Stress, trying to help people manage their thinking so they can manage their emotion. It's just so important, and I try to practice what I preach. I'm not perfect, and you're not perfect,
man,
it's worth it once you even find one tidbit of insight into making life a little bit easier.
Yeah, because if you could slow down for a moment and actually be in the moment, you actually get to live the moment instead of just reliving mm-hmm. yesterday or worrying about tomorrow.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's wonderful.
And on that note, we're going to live in the moment here and take a quick break, and we'll be back with more Answers to the Family. Our guest today is Dr. Jeff Brown, who wrote this wonderful book, Say Goodbye to Stress, Manage Your Problems Big and Small Every Day, as well as another book, The Winner's Brain, and we'll talk more about that in just a moment. Stay tuned for more Answers to the Family.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shield specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
And we're back for more Answers of the Family. I'm your host today, Dr. Melody Fox. Alan Cardoza is out doing what he does best, helping those around him. And today's guest is Dr. Jeff Brown, a psychologist and assistant clinical professor at the Department of Psychiatry at Harvard Medical School. He is also the author of some fantastic books, one that we're talking in depth about today, Say Goodbye to Stress, Manage Your Problems, Big and Small Every Day, as well as The Winner's Brain, which we'll talk about in just a moment. But before we went to the break, Dr. Jeff, we were talking about emotions and thoughts and tips on how to utilize that. I know somewhere else in your book, in that section, you talk a little bit about dialectical behavioral therapy, DBT, and radical acceptance.
Yes, yes. It's a nice dialectical behavior therapy is a form of cognitive behavioral therapy that has really been surging in our culture over the last, 15 years probably. Mm-hmm. Don't hold me to the statistic of that number, but it's very, very well known at this point. And we've known for quite some time that dialectical behavior therapy, also called DBT, is really used to focus on a personality disorder called borderline personality disorder. Now, before we go diagnosing all of our friends, after I say what borderline is a very significant personality difficulty. It's an ongoing process of difficulties in work relationships, close intimate relationships that can be either full of anger or full of intense emotion. Oftentimes, people who have borderline personality kind of wax and wane as far as their mood goes. It can be very up and down. They can be very depressed. Sometimes they hurt themselves actually through things like cutting or burning or, it's pretty significant things. And so dialectical behavior therapy has really offered some good stress management and emotional management and behavioral management strategies for people suffering with this diagnosis. So I think it's something that is important. It's in Say Goodbye to Stress because there are some key elements. I actually heard a woman speak about dialectical behavior therapy, the woman who created this, and she said that she kind of went through and chose so many of the good strategies that have been offered to pull together the DBT, the dialectical behavior therapy. And so there are some really good cognitive strategies that we can use without having to be diagnosed with borderline personality disorder. So that's the good news for all listeners. Yeah. You don't have to be diagnosed to use it.
No. Actually, I use it a lot. And a lot of those techniques of mindfulness and emotional regulation and, distress tolerance, especially if you have a lot of anxiety or anything, too, and you're worrying all the time about whatever it is and creating a lot of stress for yourself in your life, helps manage that. So there's skills in there, and not everybody you use it with is going to be borderline by any means, but they're just tools.
That's right. There are a lot of tools. And you mentioned radical acceptance. I love this concept, and it is in Say Goodbye to Stress, and it has so much to do with expectations, that sometimes we have the expectation, particularly in relationships, that something's going to be a certain way, and if it's not, then the outcome or that means something that's bad or negative or, disappointing. But sometimes we need to radically accept, not just accept it, but do whatever we need to really radically accept it. Go to the extreme to have to accept a certain person or a certain behavior or certain circumstance, and it can really help with the anxiety management and the stress management of that particular individual, relationship, or circumstance. Mm-hmm. That's a great, great strategy. I see it a lot with parents who are dealing with teens that, no matter how hard you try, your kid's just not necessarily going to turn out like you wanted them to, or they're not going to deal with something just like you would have dealt with as a kid. So sometimes we have to radically accept that, overall, my kid's a great kid, but I have to accept the fact that this is what they're doing or what they've done, and then deal with that circumstance. But it relieves that expectation that it's got to be a certain way. Now, to be clear, we're not condoning certain behaviors by radically accepting it. We're talking about stress management, that you've got to accept the situation that you're in so you can be more effective in dealing with it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I have a couple listener questions for you. One is, I'm a former school counselor, recently turned CEO of a small clothing company in Northern California. When I started this process, I had no idea how entrepreneurship could be so stressful. With a wife and two children to support and a teetering economy of our state, I find myself unable to sleep, eat nervously, and I'm stressed to the max. Is there really a way to overcome this type of anxiety? If so, I will be at the bookstore tomorrow buying your book.
That's great. That's great. You know, I think, again, going back to the idea of expectation, I would also mention here that, yes, and in Say Goodbye to Stress, we talk about specifically difficult work relationships, that is something that contributes to stress. I think here also is the idea of risk. You mentioned the winner's brain, and I love it when my books sort of come together here, that the idea of risk, we believe that risk is something that successful people learn to take, and they learn how to take risk. Another important factor that people who are successful in the brain science bears this out, and that is people are good at knowing what they have, a good talent meter, meaning that they are good at evaluating what it is that they're good at and what they're not good at, and then they do something about that. I think switching from being a school counselor to something in entrepreneurship, I think that's pretty darn exciting because you're really getting to do something that's different. But when it does come with anxiety, you probably have a lot of self-doubt. You're probably worried about the economy. You're worried about things that you can't control. And I would see in entrepreneurship so much more risk that's there. So really taking a regular, consistent inventory on that talent meter is something that I think is very helpful, and that's a concept from the winner's brain. But also just managing stress from a day-to-day basis, and dealing with work relationships and dealing with communication. Gosh, we spend more time with people at work than we do our families. And we know that one of the number one reasons that marriages end up in the therapy office is around communication. Mm-hmm. So we've got to be prioritizing communication at work, too. So there are several domains and several areas here that are important to keep in mind as you're managing anxiety in a new sort of career venture.
Yeah, and it is exciting. I know for myself, I went from working with agencies for years and years and then going out into private practice. There's the element of risk there, but it's also exciting. And that stress level is excitement as well.
Yeah, it is so exciting to be able to do that. And I think the other thing, too, here is the idea of opportunity, that the opportunity radars that we have, that ability to recognize a hot prospect and realize that something is an avenue that leads to success without it being the traditional sort of avenue. Mm-hmm. That's so important to be able to recognize that. In the winner's brain, we interviewed Phyllis Diller, and Phyllis, she's quite a lady, and she talked about how she would bypass certain venues that paid pretty well to be in the right place at the right time. That's how she connected with her mentor Bob Hope, and it's like she didn't go for the almighty dollar. She got them later because she was so good at what she did, and she's not only, you know, a comedian, she's also an artist, and she's also a pianist. So those things that come together for her, but it's that idea of opportunity, that sometimes we have to go down a path that's non-traditional. The school counselor person, you know, you probably don't jump into entrepreneurship all that often from school counseling, but it's a neat path to go down. And that story, I wish I really knew more about it, because that sounds like it was going to have a really fantastic and neat ending.
Yeah, but I think that's going back to that good talent meter, knowing what you're good at and knowing what, you know, you thrive on, and that level of stress that excites you and doesn't deplete you, and you're willing to take that risk.
That's right. There's some good psychological research that came out. It describes actually what's called the Kruger-Dunning effect, and it's also known as the double whammy of incompetence. They ask individuals to do a particular task and then evaluate how well they did that task. And the double whammy comes from, well, they did the task and they didn't do so well, but they thought that they did. And that is a situation we don't want to find ourselves in. We need to make sure that when we're learning something new, that we're getting some sort of appraisal or some sort of feedback loop to make sure that we're doing that well. It's kind of sad. It's kind of like the double whammy of incompetence, kind of what we see on American Idol tryouts, right? Where people think that they are the next American Idol, but they hardly know two notes, and those notes are not really connected well. So making sure that we do have a good talent meter is critically important, and it's something actually that's pretty easy to build if you go out and you do the research and you do the reading. Our brains, by the way, like that. If we're really good at something, it's a good idea to go back to the very basic fundamentals of something and read up on it. If I, you know, I do therapy in my office all the time, but it's a good idea. I have a book that I go back to that's an introductory therapy book, how to do therapy type book, and I'll look at that just because my brain likes that, and the research bears that out.
Yeah, and I bet that plays right along to the winner's brain. The next question is basically, I think I already touched on it, but it says, I read your book, The Winner's Brain, and loved it. My question is, how does that pair up with your new book on stress? Have you blended any of the first book's great insights here and talk about how it creates the winner in life?
Well, there are some commonalities between the common denominators. One, they're both books that come out of Harvard Medical School, so you can really trust the research that's there. You can trust that the brain science has been looked at well. You can trust that the research that we're looking at in Say Goodbye to Stress, it's all there as far as that goes. I think another common denominator is that these are both books that really help us know how to live life and try to live it fully and in a healthy way. Another factor is that the cognitive behavioral piece really is clear in both The Winner's Brain and Say Goodbye to Stress because they do match up. Think of The Winner's Brain as a manual specifically for your brain and how to make it successful and what to use as far as interventions to make your brain work well, and read about people who also have done that with their brains. And then the Say Goodbye to Stress is kind of like an owner's manual for the things that sort of attack your brain, things that can overwhelm your brain. You want your brain freed up to be able to look at things like the talent meter and the opportunity radar. You may feel like your opportunity radar is not working all that well if you're not saying no in other places. So there is some nice crossover, and my style of writing and the books that I tend to be invested in are those that have to do with making sure that you're living life and living it abundantly, and it's something that is something that we're striving for, is that healthy living and healthy thinking and healthy emotions.
Now, when you're talking about healthy living and healthy thinking, how important is sleep?
Well, I think it's very important, and we don't get enough of it, particularly teenagers don't get enough of it. Research is showing us that the teenagers need 9, maybe even 10 hours of sleep, and I don't know many that are getting that, and I'm afraid that they are getting that modeled for them again by adults, where adults, we may not need quite that much because our brains are hopefully developed at that point by adulthood, but the idea here is that we do need that sleep on a consistent basis because it helps with consolidation of memory. One of my favorite strategies that I'll share with everybody right now is that if you're needing to learn something and you're needing to recall something, you need to study that material well and then immediately go to bed, lights out, nothing else, and go to sleep, and sleep for at least 6 hours. Research has shown that that will help with the consolidation of memory, and the recall for that content and the new information will be good. That new information is something that you'll be able to recall. Now, sadly enough, I learned that about that research when I was studying for my boards in clinical psychology for my licensure many years ago, and I'm thinking, man, I really wish I'd known this over the last 10 years of school, that this would help with recall. But it certainly does, and it's a great strategy for folks to use.
Well, I know I use that when I study for my boards. I wish I would have known it earlier on, too. Maybe back in high school that would have been good, but, you know, instead of doing your homework kind of half at it and then going out to play or watch TV and then go to bed, it's better to study right before bed. But during the state boards, that's what I did. I went home, I had dinner, I, you know, did my homework, and then I went straight to sleep afterwards so I could consolidate in my brain so I wouldn't forget anything.
That is good. That's good stuff.
Yeah. But any other quick tips that we might be able to give some parents and kids?
Sure. You know, I go back to the idea of making sure that communication between kids and adults is intact. And that may mean that you have different styles of interacting with your kids and getting them to communicate. I frequently will speak with parents in my office who are trying to figure out how to connect with their teen and their adolescent, trying to understand, well, how do I get this kid to talk to me? They used to when they were a kid, but now they won't. I think one thing we really need to do is carve out time. You've kind of heard this theme throughout what we've been talking about today, this theme of priority and this theme of carving out time and sort of the time management piece. I think that it's important to carve that time out and protect it, and making sure that your child knows that you're doing that. It lets them know that they're a priority, and they can know that even if they're not in that carved out moment with you. They know that it's coming. They can anticipate that. Doing things that your kids enjoy doing is an important piece of connecting. We don't want to necessarily make them come over to communicate on our terms. We might need to learn to communicate on their terms. Now, I'm not a huge fan of video games. I think maybe an hour a day is plenty. And we see that the research tells us that actually kids with some attention issues are able to improve their attention and their focus by playing video games. But I think there is a ceiling that they hit. You know, the more you play, the better your focus gets is not doesn't hold true. Mm-hmm. But the idea here is that maybe it's important for you to learn how to play some of the video games that your kid plays. That's more boys usually than girls that are playing video games. Another thing, too, is with boys to be doing something physically active with them while you're trying to talk. That may be something if they're into board games, if board games are moving fast enough for them still, you can do something like that. Getting out, walking, going for ice cream, doing something that is physical so there is that activity of movement and that gross motor activity seems to be helpful for kids. In therapy, I frequently will go for a walk with a teenager that I'm seeing. We'll walk rather than just kind of sit in the office and look at each other across a table or across between chairs. We'll want to get out and physically do that. So that, I think also with females too, there's such incredible pressure on females today on their appearance, how they look, all of these factors that are really unfair, I believe. Culture sending the wrong message to females. And so overindulge your child in positive compliments about what they do actually possess, and let those strengths that they have naturally come on out, and let them see that you value that. That is so important. So many kids that I see want to do things that their parents are kind of surprised that they would want to do. They may want to go hang out with mom and dad more, but mom and dad are so busy, so they pick up the nonverbal cue that mom and dad are busy, so they just don't go hang out or they don't mention it. Kids will want to go to church more with their families, and parents are kind of surprised. Well, why would you do that? Well, obviously some church families, they do that all the time. But some kids remember this as a good family event that we used to do, but we got too busy and we got away from that. So families and teenagers go back to church. It's a good social place to be. So there are a lot of these things that we can be doing to invest in our kids and also let them know that we see them as a priority, and not just sort of like being politically correct by, yes, this is my child, it's an individual, but really looking at what their strengths are and helping pull that out. And they'll also eventually confide in you what they believe their weaknesses are, and you can help with that too. It's an awesome job being a parent. It's a difficult job being a parent, but it's something that is so important. I think it's the job that we don't get paid for financially, but the payoff is really priceless.
Yeah, how important is it to help your child find their own talent meter? If you notice something good that the child's at, to really encourage that or at least acknowledge it.
Yeah, particularly for kids, the whole idea of brain science and success, introducing new and novel experiences to a kid and then offering them support and trying that out is a great avenue. You can, it's just almost like a, you can't fail if you sort of take that philosophy and approach. We used to hear that kids who listened to classical music were smarter than kids who weren't. That research is defunct. That didn't really ever pan out that way. What we have found that is that the brain actually likes not only listening to music from time to time, but actually picking up an instrument and learning to play an instrument is good for the brain because it's firing neurons and helping create pathways that ordinarily may not be there. So particularly with younger kids, you want to just throw them information and maybe pick up a second language. We have a little boy at home, Grant, who's will be six the last day of this month, and he thoroughly enjoyed going to Spanish camp. We don't speak Spanish in our home, but he went to Spanish camp and loved that, and occasionally I'll hear him talk to me in Spanish because he just loves picking up that new information. But giving this the opportunities and that talent meter can be cultivated, but right now kids aren't supposed to be really tremendously good at anything, but they should be trying out a lot of positive things that are healthy and guided by, parents and caregivers.
And one of the things that I think they could pick up as we have to wrap things up here is maybe downloading the book, Say Goodbye to Stress and The Winner's Brain, because we know our kids like to listen to everything on iPod. Heaven forbid they actually pick up a book.
Absolutely.
And so go where they are.
Yes. Both books are still, or not still, but are available on as an e-book. So that's a great thing. So it's the iPad. Kids will tell me that I saw your book on our iPad on the dining table.
Sure.
Those sorts of things. And so that is good. And you're right. Meeting the kids kind of where they are is a great way. And then having a discussion as a result of maybe reading just a quick chapter in the book.
Sure. Well, our guest today, Dr. Jeff Brown. And Dr. Jeff, I am so thrilled that you're with us today. I love your books, Say Goodbye to Stress and The Winner's Brain. Both fantastic. And keep up the good work over there at Harvard Medical School and your collaboration with Chicken Soup for the Soul.
Thanks so much. It's really been my pleasure to spend this time with you.
Well, thank you very much. And best in everything that you do and continue raising your almost six-year-old child.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. And come back next week for more Answers of the Family here on LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Dr. Melody Fox right here on LA Talk Radio.
Raising children is a tough job. The job is even harder due to all the distractions, temptations, and dangers facing teens and their parents in our modern age. Some of these children are especially challenging and make such poor decisions as teens that their parents fear for their child's safety and future. I'm Lon Woodbury, and as an independent educational consultant, in my 22 years of practice as Woodbury Reports, we have worked to help hundreds of parents individually throughout the country who fear for their child's future. We also have an extensive website, strugglingteens.com, that provides as much objective information as we can to help parents. And we produce an LA Talk Radio show interviewing leading professionals who are helping parents right after Answers for the Family. If you have a child whose decisions make their future in doubt, and you are looking for help, you can call me at 208-267-5550, and I'll be glad to try to help you. Or check my website, strugglingteens, that's one word, .com.